So we are on ALA's requirements subcommittee call. It's Monday, August 31st. And this is Ben Chung. I'm presenting on the R8 service modeling use case and service creation. I created an entry in the Honolulu Reese functional requirements proposed list off of ALA's page here, and I'll put it in the chat for everybody. So this page is where basically it's tracking all of the functional requirements. There's another page for the non-functional requirements. And I added a table for what will be the, where I'll upload the recording from today. And also I will, I've uploaded the presentation that I'm about to give. All right, so some of you might have seen this already. I've presented this at quite a number of different forums and places. Trying to keep everybody in loop and socialize the concepts and involve lots of different groups to get their input. Jacqueline has actually had a lot of great input, and Zoo and Oscar and Andy. So they've all contributed heavily to this, some of the ideas and things in this presentation. Okay, so my main sort of area of focus here is I just wanted to make sure that ONAP is ready to turn up a live 5G base station and to basically think about from a modeling standpoint and from a service creation standpoint and a runtime standpoint, when we actually do try to turn up a 5G base station, that we're ready and that there aren't any surprises, because there are lots of things in ONAP that take a long time to happen, right? Like modeling takes discussion and time and process as well. It should. It's not something that you should do willy-nilly or haphazardly. And so that's sort of the purpose of this use case. 5G, really briefly, is based on three main concepts: EMBB, enhanced mobile broadband, and going from 100 megabits per second from 4G to 20 gigabits/10 gigabits in the uplink downlink in 5G. So 100 times to the capacity and of 4G. MMTC, massive machine type communications, the development of the Internet of Things, and ultra reliable low latency communications, sub-millisecond communications, and allowing for haptic communications and extreme density of devices and connections, up to 1 million connections per square kilometer. ONAP is, of course, going to hopefully manage a live 5G base station, which is principally comprised of a centralized unit, a distributed unit, and RF units. There's some question of whether the what ORAN calls the ORU or the radio units will actually be controlled by ONAP, or whether they just sort of need to be aware of them. So we've had that discussion. That was actually a point brought up by Michaela. And she has, we've sort of concluded on that there are use cases that do need to know about that, and that would be kept track of in the CMPS database. But ONAP certainly does care about DUs and CUs as PNFs and VNFs, and those are seen as managed things. Now, prior to R7, pretty much all of those elements are simulated. So anytime we've needed to show or demo some kind of use case, that they've always been simulated things. And of course, when we turn up a real base station, are there other things that we need to think about? And that's the point of this use case. This is sort of a discussion about the carrier sector or cell, which is also an important concept as well, because it's a really fundamental thing and has been since 1G days. And I started working in wireless in 2G, and cells have just been a fundamental concept of wireless and RAN communications. And so a cell is also something that we will be tracking in the CMPS database is a logical entity. So I have this slide here because just to show that we've given some thought to it, and it's something that anybody working in the wireless world is going to quickly ask, what are you doing with cells? So, okay, so the main thing that is going into that R8 functional requirement proposed list page is this list of executive, the high level business driver and impact. So why are we doing this? Why is it important? So basically, there are standards that drive the 5G NRM that 5G GNBs should be using from 3GPP TS28.540, 541, which is the 5G NRM. Part one is in 540 and part two and three is in 541. And those are also kind of built on top of 3GPP TS28.620 and 622, the generic information model. And basically, the 3GPP standards obviously has given a lot of thought to modeling a 5G base station, and sort of the question is how much or how little of that do we want to use in ONAP itself to be able to manage a base station, and how much does it need to know at all? So those sorts of questions are the questions that we've been tackling in this past release, and as the CMPS project evolves and as the use cases that are going to be using those models, such as the end-to-end network slicing and OFSON PCI, develop, they'll also naturally have they're going to have some answer whether we like it or not, basically. So of course, it's all of this is crucial in actually turning on real life 5G base station, which is the whole point of trying to make progress in ONAP. So of course, it's super important from a business impact standpoint, but it also applies to any domain as well, wireless transport, optical, wireline, and you'll see in some of my later slides that we have mention of other domains as well. There are other domains such like Open ROADM and things like that are coming from optical that have similar, like an optical network resource model, for example, that we also have to think about as well. So we can't just purely think about it from the RAN standpoint as well. But there's nothing unique from the financial finding or organizational management sales strategies that are kind of unique to this use case. Okay, so in runtime, you're creating an instance of a 5G service. In design time, you're designing a service. Those services have a set of resources and policies and blueprints and templates and other vendor provided information and artifacts. And those resources have associated with it some particular set of models and data and descriptors that are relevant. And that's something that we need to be aware of in this use case. In a 5G base station or a GNB, there are some number of DUs that are supported per CU. That'll vary obviously by vendor. It's generally some multiple of a factor of two, right? Like 32, 64, 128, that kind of thing. But there's some number of DUs that can be connected per CU, and some number of RUs that can be connected to a DU, and some number of cells that are connected that are serviced by an RU, and then those are connected to AMFs and UPFs. And these are all modeled in design time. So design time heavily focuses on the sort of connections that you'll have between CUs and DUs, and that's kind of all in place. So that's good. I don't think there's too much else we need to do there. So that leads us to thinking about the 5G NRM. So the generic information model, the so-called umbrella information model and federated network information model coming from 3GPP TS28.620 sort of introduces this concept of a managed element and GNode B DU function. So again, a GNode B is a 5G base station, DU is the distributed unit. And then a cell associated with that. And it's also discussed in 622, the generic network resource model. But a lot of these things kind of already exist in ONAP already. So it sort of begs the question, you know, you probably don't want to blindly use the 5G NRM because there's going to be a lot of conceptual overlap between the two things. If you do just pull it in blindly, then how do you map those two things together? We're kind of, ONAP, even though it's not specifically sort of driven by a standard, has an evolved model, much like the 5G universe has an evolved model. And stitching those two together will create lots of conceptual overlap, right? So we also see some of the models for the distributed units specifically. So these are relevant models for the DU side of the house. So it tells you these endpoints from the F1 to the control plane, to the user plane, to the 5G node B centralized unit control plane function. So basically a DU, this is basically showing you this connection between the DU and the CU. So you'll see some models basically break up the CU into a control plane and user plane functionality, and then anytime you see EP is the endpoint, so there's some logical endpoints that connect those two things together. And then in the managed function, you have the DU, CU, user plane and control plane as functions, and then cells, and bandwidth parts and carrier sectors and frequency relations and cell relations that are all managed functions representing things, entities in a gnode B. This is the transport model. So there's also, as you can imagine, a whole bunch of things that are connected to each other. So way back up here, if we look, there's the user plane management function, the session management function, the unified data management function, the authentication service function, the access management function. So there's lots of things that kind of control slices, that control access to the UEs and keep track of sessions. There's some unique 5G things that get introduced that are used to track those things. And in the 5G transport model, of course, the and that's one of the domains too, the transport domain too. It's a little simpler, I think, modeling wise. It describes how things are kind of connected together, and there's where a lot of these endpoint things are mentioned in the 5G NRM. Okay, so I also just copied the PNF and VNF descriptor models, the ANEI model of, this is what's within ONAP in ANEI, some of the parameters that are tracked in ANEI right now, which is sort of relevant to the discussion. And I tried to sort of also group within ONAP, what are the, where are the models? Of course, the main one is the platform information model, which I'm about to show. Things that are relevant, the complex object, the SDAC, ANEI schema, and then things coming from the standards, the 3GPP standards that I've mentioned and have gone over. And then Jacqueline and I and Andy and others from the modeling team have also been discussing the geolocation. How do we model the geolocation stuff, which is also relevant as well to the complex and place object that's being developed, which is important, maybe not right out of the gate, but will be important as ONAP evolves and tries to manage a 5G network. So this is the current root model, the platform information model at a high level. And I'll just call attention to basically that there are entities and there are design entities and operational entities, and those have descriptors, and so like those, the like that picture I showed above with the services, you create resources and services, and those have PNFs and VNFs associated with them, both in design time and runtime. And this is sort of a model that's abstracting this this, right? So conceptually, a service has some set of resources, and you see that in this model here. So Jacqueline has also been leading in the CMPS team some discussion about modeling and adding an application model and its associated application data instance. This discussion is evolving and in flux, I would say. So there's whether it's its own separate thing or maybe it's introduced within something else. The concept, though, is basically a good one. So I think the discussion is that maybe we can just suck in the domain's application model and then build on top of that any vendor specific stuff into that. But then of course you're going to have a lot of conceptual overlap, and then with some things that are already in ONAP. So I feel that that's sort of an evolving discussion, which is integral to the solution, I think, of this use case as well. So I run a meeting every month. So at first I was incorporating it with Jacqueline and Andy and I's geolocation and civic address discussions, but it kind of grew out of its britches. So I spun off a new meeting. It meets on the third Thursday of every month. So in some of those meetings we were discussing and thinking about how these models how would we incorporate this information, whether we would just, the simplest way might be just to if we were starting ONAP from just, from ground zero, from total scratch, just from the beginning, and it wasn't, 5 years on or whatever, many years on into ONAP's life, officially announced February 2017, but of course it had a life in eComp before then. We might just incorporate a lot of the 5G NRM stuff just from the get-go, right? And to add it as an afterthought is probably now quite difficult, because you'd have to probably extend and redesign some number of things, or certainly add a bunch of stuff. But it might not be bad to add something to allow ONAP to work easier with various NRMs that are coming from different domains. So I'm showing here some of the key things, which you'll see in later in the next few slides. In design time, we care about basically some body of information that describes a model that a box, a PNF or VNF uses. And certainly that resource is going to have a whole bunch of vendor-specific information associated with it. The 5G NRM has 288 parameters associated with it. And vendor-specific information is likely also to be on the order of hundreds of new parameters, if not, possibly in the low thousand number. So in design time, in SDC, you're going to create a resource, you're going to define a resource, you're going to define a service and resources that services needs. SDC is going to create an export, a service CSER package onto the DMAT bus, and then runtime entities that care about services are going to receive that package so it knows what to the sort of services that needs to support, and then instantiate those services with work orders. And I'm also showing here the CMPS database, because it will, of course, need to have records for those resources, resource instances for those service instances. This is showing that application model that I just showed a second ago. So another possibility is maybe we take the we take these NRMs and incorporated it from an application model and have some sort of base model that we can sort of stuff all of the domain model information into, and then also add in all the vendor specific stuff and then just let that kind of ride or associate it with the service, with the resource rather, and then that will be incorporated into the service, and then at, during runtime, they can sort it all out basically. So clearly something in runtime is gonna have to know for that resource, I need to look at this particular thing inside that resource to get that particular object. So, you know, there's a saying in writing, like what's very difficult to write is easy to read. What's very easy to write is very difficult to read. So if we were to totally redesign the platform information model such that all of this is already there, we didn't have to have sort of two models. In other words, what's if a lot of rework was done in the modeling space, it would be very easy in runtime because you wouldn't have to sort of sort through all that information. Given that that's probably not going to happen, you're effectively having two models, a platform information model and an application model to represent pieces of data associated with a resources, which is going to make it harder in runtime or microservices maybe to figure out what belongs where and what pieces do I need and are they coordinated and are they associated with this, that, and the other. But we're not starting from scratch, so we probably don't have that option to totally overhaul the platform information model. So there may be some minor things though that we might need to enhance with the platform information model. I don't think we should preclude that that no changes in the platform information model will happen. But I think right now the current thinking is that we'll probably introduce this application model somehow. Where specifically, I think might be a little bit up for debate, and how this eventually looks might be a little bit up for debate as well. Unfortunately, in R7, which is where we are right now, and we're actually not that far off from M4 code freeze in R7. But in R7, there's already use cases like the end-to-end network slicing and some PCI use case that are already using model. You're already using parameters from the 5G NRM, and there, the longer this doesn't have a solution, the harder it will be to change once they've already coded something. So once something gets coded, you know, it can be extremely difficult to change stuff. So we probably need some modeling solution like a month ago, I would say. So probably like a couple months ago. So there is some urgency to sort of finalize on stuff in R7. Now Jacqueline's looking at this modeling from CMPS standpoint. That's fine. You have a whole release to do that because CMPS isn't going to be a standalone project until at least R8. But other things are needing the solution kind of yesterday. So probably need to come to some conclusions there. Okay, so this is basically showing what I showed before, except that this is sort of open to maybe we make some minor modifications of platform information model as well to accommodate this. You'll see here some of the notes here that as I have meetings, sometimes I just, as people are giving ideas, I'm writing stuff down. So Zhu suggested, well, you know, if we have a if we introduce a NRM artifact in design time and that's onboarded by a vendor in the vendor's onboarded CSER package, and that object, that NRM, is then going to be associated with the resource, and it effectively gets exported in the service CSER, then things that need to use it will basically be able to pull up that NRM and then, for example, in CMPS, create a creative records or the microservice to be able to pull up that NRM and see what parameters or is relevant for that resource. Maybe that's all we need. Maybe that having that artifact available allows runtime platform components to be able to look eventually, I have this kind of resource, I have that kind of vendor's resource, I have that kind of NRM associated with that kind of resource, and I have that kind of parameter associated with that NRM associated with that vendor's resource associated with that PNF or VNF. So it might make the code kind of complex, but it makes this whole flow relatively straightforward. So I've had some other meetings. This is the collection of several meetings and some thoughts that are kind of smashed together from various meetings, modeling subcommittee and the dedicated calls I have and the use case realization calls. And anyway, so one of the things that we have to think about also in runtime is we're going to have some sort of service instance and resources that register with ONAP and are instances of those resources, PNFs and VNFs associated with that service. And at some point, the something in the software is going to have to keep, whether it's a microservice or the platform component or CNPS database, has to know what kind of resource I have and the NRM that I need for it, whether it's a optical NRM or 5G NRM or whatever. I need to know for that resource what kind of thing is associated with that NRM, and then when I actually go to do something with that resource, you're going to have to know basically what kind of data I have for that. So for example, a 5G base station has a different kind of base NRM than an optical one. And the CNPS database is also going to have lots, you can imagine many, many thousands of records associated with all sorts of different kinds of resources. And I also attend and help host the CNPS calls on Fridays. And last week when we talked about this topic, Tony, one of the leads on the CNPS project, had said, so the intention is that basically when a microservice creates a record, it will be the master of that information. So if you create a record for a PNF, that particular thing, something's going to own that record for that PNF. And then if something else wants access to it, it has to go to that service and ask for that. And that's fine, but you're also going to have some sort of index to keep track you're going to have some sort of index to keep track of what kind of record that is, so I know who to ask. And so I have some sort of index of who owns that stuff and what it is. And he agreed with that. So basically, Jack and I were discussing, we probably would want some sort of tag or some meaningful classification to allow these records to be sorted. So you can envision several different kinds of uses for this data. It might be the case that you have, for example, an off-some PCI use case, that you just know a whole body of cells or PNFs that you're associated with that you're trying to assign PCI values to, right? It's going to locally keep track of, here's all the records that are relevant to me, here's all the PNFs and cells that are relevant to me, and as information streams in, I'm going to have PCI values for them. So in that case, you just know all your records and that's that. But you could also imagine, for example, maybe a correlation type function. I want to know some problem over here is correlated to that kind of event or that kind of problem over there, where something may need to kind of step through even cross-domain type records. And in that case, you're going to have to figure out some way to access lots of different records kept by different services. And rather than have to dig into each of the records deeply, you probably want something to make ONAP management at a higher level simpler. Like you, for example, you might want a domain bit associated with that record to say this is an optical type thing or transport type thing or a RAN type thing record, as a very simple example. And this is why modeling takes time, because you know these sorts of questions take time to think about, and you don't want to haphazardly design it. But of course, you know, on the other end is that there are use cases that need that are underway. So there's some time pressure in that sense. So I just want to show here quickly the CMPS, how CMPS plays a role. So the Configuration Persistence Service project is a project that is underway now in R7. And basically it's underway as a POC, as a proof of concept. But one of the main things that's happening, there's another use case also in R7, the 3GPP ONAP ORAN standard defined VES event introduction, which is gonna define and introduce the standard defined VES event, where basically a PNF can emit a standard defined VES event with that topic, standard defined topic. It's received by the VES collector and passed on by DCA and published onto the DMAP bus under the 3GPP provisioning namespace topic. And that basically tells the rest of ONAP that is listening on that topic, you know, here's a new piece of configuration information update that is coming from a PNF. And of course, the CMPS database will care about that. And that new configuration value, of course, is relevant just to that resource and that kind of resource, right? So a Huawei base station or Nokia or Ericsson base station is going to care about different kinds of parameters, possibly vendor specific or very likely vendor specific stuff that other ones don't care about. And so you can imagine that I need to know when I get that piece of information, I need to know what resource it's for and what kind of model is associated with that in order to meaningfully save off that information. So this is just showing a quick overview of the CMPS roadmap. So CMPS, it was actually started under the OFSON PCI use case under the auspices of the Configuration DB project, and it resides in CCSDK and SDNC right now. And in R7, there will be extensions basically to support the end-to-end network slicing. Like I mentioned earlier, I mean, these use cases need a solution right now, and they're gonna just do whatever, even without any really thought to modeling, if they're just storing parameters just, you know, sort of blindly without any sort of modeling structure to it. So the longer we wait on this, I mean, you know, the more difficult it will be to move towards a more structured format, I think, if we don't provide them some guidance, right? So I also mentioned that there's a model-driven POC, which is basically some early development of the CMPS base software and architectural decisions that are made before we introduce it as a standalone project in R8. So there's three major aspects to all of this. One is you have to take this information and this model and onboard it. So I've mentioned basically from a vendor's package, you're going to have to take some model and some specific information and somehow get it into ONAP. Number two, you're going to have to take those models and basically have some way that you can structure ONAP's either, you know, ONAP's structure to be able to work with those models. And then three, in runtime, you're gonna have to be able to use those models to store that information. So from the onboarding standpoint, Zhu had suggested, well, what if we just introduce a NRM Yang artifact. And of course, there might be Ansible artifacts as well to basically pull in these NRMs. And they would just basically be just yet another, you know, another Yang module, or possibly an Ansible module. So this would basically mean that we might have to introduce a new non-mano artifact type keyword so that you can tell where these artifacts are or indexed. And it might be possible just that you would incorporate this information into just whatever existing Yang modules that you already have. But this is probably how the NRM would be pulled into a vendor provided package, also a CSAR file. So Zhu and I and Michaela worked on the pre-onboarding onboarding use case in R4. And so we drew this diagram basically to show that all of the artifacts that are pulled in from the onboarded package from a vendor are also basically pulled into the service CSAR package as well. They may be repackaged a little bit in possibly a different place. And there's also extra metadata that SDC specifically tacks onto stuff. And these metadata things often will tell you some high-level meta information about your package, and also where to find these artifacts. And where they're, you know, the sort of directory structure of where they're located. So if we had a dedicated like NRM object or YAML file, it would probably just be in one of these artifact things. And like we showed here, it would be, you know, artifacts and deployment and Yang module. And then it could be pulled into the service CSAR package and then be exported when a service is designed. Now, this is all very confusing because there's kind of multiple CSAR representations and packages. So the next slide shows that the vendor onboards a CSAR package, the SDC has an internal representation of that CSAR package, and then after you design a service, the SDC outputs a service CSAR package. So there's three CSAR packages that can easily be confused, right? So vendor is gonna onboard some NRM in SDC, has a representation of that onboarded thing, and that's what the SDC team wanted me to call the SDC internal CSAR package, and then when you create and define a service from the SDC's design studio, SDC exports a SDC service CSAR package, which other platform components will receive. So all along that chain, the NRM that's onboarded will be incorporated into, as I just showed in the previous slide, will be incorporated into the SDC internal CSAR package, and then that will essentially be absorbed in the service CSAR package as well. And from a modeling standpoint, if we introduce this, we may need this non-mano artifact keyword to allow something to find that artifact. Okay, so I think that's basically the let me go back to the main page here. So that's basically the key thing in R8. I think that we're evolving from R7. So it's really, we've done some legwork in R7, and I think we're going to extend that in R8 to try to conclude on some of these decisions, like what will this look like, and what will this solution ultimately look like. So I guess let me stop there. I'm almost out of time. So let me just stop there for questions from people and thoughts.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Yeah.
Really great presentation. Guys, are there any questions?
Okay, and a lot of people have, like Andy, I see Andy and Jacqueline and Tin and Sue are on the call. I mean, they've been, they attend, you know, the monthly meetings and have been in the modeling calls. So they've already been heavily involved in this, the evolution of this slides as well. So they're intimately familiar, I think, with the content. So, okay.
All right, but, Ben,
yeah.
Ben, that's a question.
Sure. Go ahead.
I understand in R7, we did a lot of discussion on the modeling.
Mm.
For R8, what is the plan? Is that to just continue with the modeling discussion, or you have any?
Well, so I hope we can do more than just discuss, right? So even in R7, I feel there's some urgency for us to decide what this really looks like, because, you know, it's not just the CNPS team that needs a solution. It's the, you know, OSAM PCI use case and the network slicing that is really waiting on. Every time I attend those calls, they kind of look to me like, where are we with this stuff? And I say, well, we're still discussing it. And as you know, when we presented at the use case realization call, I think Oscar was sort of questioning, do we really need sort of this other artifact? Can't we just use whatever Yang module we already have there? Which means that we wouldn't need what you'd suggested as a new non-mano artifact type. So we need to move forward on some of these decisions, and I took some action items.
So if I understand correctly, you try to get a conclusion in R8. On this modeling discussion, is that correct?
I would like to get a conclusion in R7, actually, if possible, and then in R8, and then in R8, just finish up what we have yet to do. If we can just conclude and finish everything in R7, that would be great. Okay. I don't think that'll happen, though, because we're already deep into R7.
So my question is, let's say we get a conclusion on R7. So what we are going to do with R8? I think this is use case for R8.
It is a use case for R8. So yeah, this is saying, this is presenting a lot of where we are now. And R8 would be, if we finish all of this in R7, there's no R8 use case. And I'm totally happy with that. And I'll mark it and close it out in R8.
It typically doesn't happen, right?
But that's not likely to happen, given that we're a week or two away from M4 right now.
Right.
So I think even if we introduce something in the modeling community, the software is still far behind from using it. Because again, M4 is just a couple weeks away, really. And if we look at the schedule for Honolulu,
it's next week.
Yeah, it's really, we kind of already missed the boat already, unfortunately.
But this is more like a modeling discussion. There's no code submission, so it doesn't matter M4 or not.
Yeah, so that's true. Except so let's ask, how would the software change to use the model? And I see three places where it's going to change, right? So number one, eventually the CMPS stuff is going to use this model deeply, right? So that's fully an R8 thing. Number two, the existing, let's say lack of models from the existing microservices need to probably somehow adapt or maybe come into alignment with what's going on. And I think number three, other things that you have actually mentioned, like VNF SDK, the requirements, SDC, are things that also need to, are work that we haven't even thought about much yet. So that's probably all this is gonna happen in R8, I feel. So, but if all of this can happen in R7, that's great. And certainly if you want to jump in and help out and join this stuff, that would be wonderful, or you and Jacqueline. And I've tried to engage these teams as much as I can. But a lot of it is sort of pending on, we don't have a final solution yet. I think this is an idea, and it's a good idea, but I feel it's not fleshed out in any way, shape, or form. It still needs some discussion. I still have some questions about whether this should be just this total standalone object or whether it should really be incorporated into some of these other objects. That's kind of my feelings on this right now.
I think we're close to the end of the call. So thank you, really, Ben.
Thank you, everybody.
So
I'll
for the next,
I'll upload this the recording and the slides here, so you can listen to or point other people to it. Yeah.
Right. So for the next call, I think what we probably should do is to go through the backlog that we have from the previous releases and to see what stays relevant, what can be relevant for the next call. So let me discuss offline with you guys how we bring that into the table, because you know TC clearly wanted us to consider backlog and first, and I think that you know, next call, still beginning of September, would be a good opportunity for that, hoping that also the following one would be dedicated to the priorities by end user advisory group. So let's see if you have any suggestions on how backlog should be covered, how we look into backlog, please approach me or just send email over the list, whatever you prefer. But I would say that the next call should be dedicated to backlog from the previous releases and what and how we take it towards the next one.
We could also go over the R7 pages, functional, non-functional pages, and just sort of check off there's how far along we are.
Right. This is what I was thinking. This is exactly why I'm saying that if you have any suggestions, send them out. And, you know, if you have several, we can pick up those, perhaps, you know, the most applicable. But I was thinking basically about the same, right? Going through the pages of R7 and seeing what indeed got into release or not. But let's see. In any case, let's perhaps chat before the next call, because, and also I'll send an explicit email, of course, authors of those which did not get into release 7, welcome to actually, you know, present then also those from the backlog. But in any case, if you have an idea, one of them, obviously, as Ben has mentioned, please send them to me. So let's then discuss it in 2 weeks from now. Thank you, and talk to you in 2 weeks.
Great, thank you. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.